Jordan, we got a lot to dive into because it was a big weekend. CPL action, MLS action, a drama with Toronto FC. Josh Cloak, who wrote an article alongside Paul Tenorio, Tom Bogert, revealing a lot of information, behind-the-scenes information with Toronto FC. We'll have him on the show to dive a little bit more into that. And I may have put something out on my Instagram page.
May have?
Okay, so I put something out on my Instagram page that you may or may not have seen. Our boy Jordan was using a Telestrator over the weekend. And, you know, a lot of people are like, how could, yeah, that's so funny. You know, you watch other people and you, you know, it's haha, so funny that look what they drew and they didn't even know that they drew it. And then it's your turn to use a Telestrator and you draw the exact same thing. I want to know, Jordan. So sorry if you're just listening to audio, but there's a certain image on my screen right now. Again, go to my Instagram page, you'll see it.
A highway and two circles.
There's a highway and two circles.
That's all that's there.
The two circles are on either side of the highway. At what point did you realize what you drew? Did you have a moment on air or did you just not know at all because you were so into the play that you were breaking down?
I was too close. I was zoned in. I didn't realize until Wheels said the night school comment. I said, wow, I must have drawn something a bit.
What did he say?
Provocative. He said... Because I painted this whole picture of Mr. Wilson, I'm going to take you to school, this is what I'm going to draw, I'm going to educate. Mm. And when he said the night school comment, oh, that was great by Jordan, but this is a bit of night school, it wasn't day school, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, you're not teaching kindergarten.
I was like, yes, this might be for the upper echelon, it might be for the older, the older people. So then I realized I must have drawn something that looks like something.
Yes, you did, it's a rocket.
But look, hey, for the podcasters, all I will say is first I drew the circle. And I drew another circle.
Because you were highlighting players.
And I was highlighting Pacific Nyangabiri.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Driving in that space. So I drew a little bit.
He's about to shoot out like a cannon right in the middle. Yeah, he's going.
So I drew this. And then not realizing what it looks like. Yeah. But look, I stand behind it. I think it was a very educational moment. Now I'm also aware moving forward.
You have to be so careful.
And what you draw.
It is so easy in sport. Like that literally is an image that comes up because of certain things that you're highlighting. Anyways, we wanted to have a little bit of fun with it.
Any chance you get to be like, Rookie, you can't even draw. Like, but I will say this, Trills, as much as you're the big sis and you bully me and we have this banter, you did ask to post.
I did.
Like, so there was no hazing involved. There's no. Egregious. You said, look, can I post this? And first I said, maybe you could laugh to yourself. Then you baited me. You're no fun. That was her message. So I said, you know what? Post it.
Yeah.
Go and get it. No, you have to. In the football culture as well, if I did something like this, there would be t-shirts made when I showed up the next day. So this was perfect.
We're just having a little fun. The group chat, the One Soccer group chat, we had a lot of fun with that. You were already saying your goodbyes to everyone. You're like, it was nice working with all of you.
I just passed the 90-day probation period, yeah. And then this happened.
And then you did that. Anyway, so we had some fun with that. We'll see what the future has in store for you in the use of Telestrators. Let's talk a little Forge Atletico Ottawa. This was a great back and forth affair. Tristan Henry standing on his head. And then what do you know? I think even people on Twitter were saying, is this not classic Forge, right? They're going to defend. They're going to absorb, and then they're going to get a goal in stoppage time. Oh, wait a second. They got a goal in stoppage time and they end up defeating Atletico Ottawa late by David Chouinard getting the winner. I mean, how do you just keep up with Forge? Do they have an ability to win in so many different ways?
They do, but I think... if you look at this squad and the way they played this weekend, I don't want to say luck, because I think you make your own luck in football a bit. But Tristan Henry, MVP, you're a goalkeeper, lover, hugger. This guy, the saves that you were making were not eight saves that were like routine saves. These were the free kick by Ollie Bassett for me. He wraps his hand. The way he gets across, boom. He was just, I feel like if they played 30 minutes longer, he still would have saved more shots. Like he just was he was in the zone, locked in, on one of those days where you're not going to score on him. But Forge, you look at Atletico Ottawa, I thought they played well. I thought they had a game that was positive. They just couldn't score, but they created, which was great because you look at them earlier in the year and they were struggling. But then Forge has just those guys going forward. When I look at Chouinard, Borges, all these guys were a part of that goal. And they can continue to go forward, and they even have a bench. So Forge just have a plethora of options going forward, and they look like the team to beat.
Yeah, Pacific obviously is on their heels. That's the one team where you do look at them and you think, okay, if anyone's going to challenge them for a regular season title,
yeah,
could be Pacific.
But with Pacific, right, you have a game where you're beating Halifax at home, and then you let them back in the game, which I think Forge has tightened up with from previous years. Like, when they're winning, they're able to close out a game. But also, if they're losing, they've come back. They did it with Halifax at home. But they're that team now. They're scoring one goal on defending. Or defending well and then getting that late goal like they did against Atletico Ottawa. So it's going to be tough to beat. These teams got to catch up to them.
And we're starting to see teams kind of get into their rhythm. They're feeling a little bit more comfortable in their skin. Other than Pacific, is there another team you feel could break out and challenge Forge? Who do you think could just start to maybe come into their own a little bit more?
I mean, I think it's a three-man race between, even though Calgary lost yesterday, I have to put Calgary, York up there. And then if I'm going to pick another team and I have to, it's tough because you're looking at Halifax struggling.
Do you think that's a bit of a kick in the pants for Cavalry because they were coming off a win, they were feeling really good, and then they lose on the road? And I'm sure
Tommy Wheeldon Jr. is livid.
Yeah.
Because look, we talk about if you get blamed for something that you didn't do, but also what it takes to score a goal in football is difficult. The way they scored their goal that was offside, Moosey was onside. It was clearly onside. It wasn't like he was level. He was literally behind the defender, ran in front. They had a perfect goal that they've worked on in training and whatnot, and that's taken back. So he's livid, and I think in many respects, he could be upset with officials and whatnot, and I don't want to do this and just talk about officials. But Calgary have been playing well, just been a hairline short of making things happen. But for me, I got to put York up there because that was a big win yesterday, even though it probably should have been a tie at a point because that goal was disallowed. But they're finding a way to win games, so I'm putting them up there as well.
Mm-hmm. Things are getting a little
slight. I've changed though, right? Like, I never said they were going to finish 7th or 6th, but I was like, oh, 5th, that 5th place spot.
Don't let that get into your head.
No.
So here's the thing, as a rookie broadcaster, when we do our power rankings, you know, or we any types of things that we do before the season starts, yeah, okay, fine. Maybe you can go back to them, but don't worry, it's okay. Don't worry, it's okay.
Thanks.
No one's gonna hold it against you. Maybe just a little bit hold it against you. Nobody's really gonna hold it against you. You don't have to say, I did not put this. And you know, you always feel like you have to defend yourself. It's okay, we understand it's before the season starts. It's a guessing game. As the season goes on, we continue to reevaluate.
Fair.
Yeah, it's okay, don't worry about it.
Thanks.
And you know who else needs to do some serious reevaluating? Is Toronto FC.
Oh, what a segue.
A bombshell of an article that came out a few days ago. One of the authors, there were three, Josh Cloak of The Athletic, who worked alongside Tom Bogert and Paul Tenorio, joining us again. Friend of the show here on One Nation. It's great having you here, Josh. If you didn't read the article, I don't know where you've been, but make sure you read the article on The Athletic. And before we dive a little bit more into that, I wanted to add to your article because it seems like there's progression to it here, Josh, because one of the main things you talk about, let me pull up a quote here. One of the main things you talk about in the article, of course, are the Italians and Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi and not getting along with Bob Bradley. So they pull off the victory on Saturday, benching Bernardeschi, second highest paid player. Lorenzo does a press conference, Josh, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, where he says, I've always been happy with the club. I'm happy with the coach as well. There's never been arguments with the coach. My family is very happy here as well. When you heard that, what did you make of that?
I thought it was somewhat curious timing that, you know, this was the first time we heard. I thought, you know, this is the first time we heard Lorenzo Insigne speak to the media all season. You can read into that what you will. Look, the club, the player, they're all doing their jobs. They won, so they have every right to come out and, you know, feel good about the performance, feel good about the result, and say what they want. I think we'd be surprised if Lorenzo Insigne said anything different than what he said. That was my reaction to those quotes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why are you smiling over there, Jordan?
Because I believe him.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, let me specify. I believe Lorenzo Insigne when he says that he enjoys Toronto. What a city! To say that you've never argued with the coach? Brother, come on. Stop this. Who are you kidding? And that's fine. That's allowed. But I think it is, I agree with you, Cloak. It is curious. The timing of the you coming out and saying that, it's calculating. That's what I want to say.
I want you to take us also, Josh, maybe just a little bit inside, you know, a reporter. When you're reporting on something like this, you know, how challenging it can be, how difficult it can be, you know, because I'm sure you also get some pushback from the club and just the steps that need to be taken to be as fair as possible in your reporting. Because, you know, you talked about everything from the coaching to the players as well, not getting along and possibly causing some problems, right? And the Bob Bradley, Michael Bradley relationship possibly causing some problems, and also the leadership possibly causing some problems here, and Bill Manning and some of the decisions that have been made. How do you even approach a story like this?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking, because I think the nuts and bolts of a story like this is something that doesn't get talked about a lot, and I can kind of understand why. But I think in terms of fairness, the way we approach fairness is talking to as many people as possible. I think we were probably in a place where we could have written some form of this story at the end of last season, some form of this story, because I think there were whispers about some, you know, discontent from certain players and the direction that the club was going in. You know, it didn't really look like they were, you know, on the best foot forward, I guess we can say. So we could have written something maybe a little bit more salacious. But I think the key for us was to just talk to as many people as possible, so you get as wide a scope of how things are, you know, truly are. And we can't know for sure, because we are not in the dressing room. But the more and more people you talk to, the more you're able to cross certain things off the list. There were things we wanted to put in this story that we didn't, because maybe we had heard them from one person. It was important to us to get everything multiple sourced. And again, this is very nuts and bolts. It's very inside baseball. But I think in terms of fairness, the more people you talk to, the more perspectives you get, generally then fairness seems to follow, because you're hearing from kind of all sides of the story. We didn't get Lorenzo Insigne and Bernadeschi on record for this story, even though I think what Bernadeschi said in the lead up to the story spoke volumes. They declined comment through the club, and that's their right. But we talked to everybody else involved in the story, and we gave them an opportunity to share their perspective. And again, so I think when you talk to as many people as possible, you hope that the outcome is fair. I don't know. You guys read it. What did you think? Were we being fair?
I thought it was so fair to the point where if I'm a fan, because fans love to choose sides, right? Whose side do you choose? If you were at the game on Saturday, you would say a lot of them chose the side of Federico, you know, Bernadeschi. I saw already some signs there, free Fede. They booed Bob Bradley when he was introduced. But still, right? Like, I don't think it's easy, because you can see all three sides, how all three sides are contributing. I mean, by three sides, I mean, you know, the Bob Bradley and then with the son relationship, the Italians. And then I can also see, you know, the leadership. I can see all three sides, fans looking at that going, ugh, this is why the crest, the badge is what we care about, right? That's what we care about. How do you rectify? So if you're a fan, Josh, like, I just don't know who you're cheering for.
You're cheering for, I think, and I would say this just as a fan of other clubs or whatever, you're cheering for reason. You're cheering for logic, right? And I think that's the interesting thing too. As we started working on this story, I think there's sometimes a predisposition to say, well, we're looking for one smoking gun. We're looking for like the one thing that went wrong here. And that's not the case at all in this story. And it's not the case with most kind of, I guess we could call it breakdowns. It was just a series of questionable decisions that just kept adding up and adding up. And you had players after the game, I believe it was Matt Hedges, spoke to the official broadcaster and said, like, it hasn't been a great vibe around here this season. I'm paraphrasing. So it's not like, you know, we were way, way off base. But look, in terms of who you cheer for, I thought it was important that our story ended on the idea that there's no quick fix to getting Toronto FC back to where they were when we considered them one of the preeminent franchises in MLS. And I think if anything, it's just been a series of kind of my perspective is just some hastily made decisions. So I think when you look back at where Toronto FC was, you know, they were a little bit more patient and they kept adding pieces. They kept adding pieces, right? We think about how close TFC were in 2016 to winning MLS Cup. But they weren't satisfied. They had to slowly add. They added Victor Vasquez. They kept adding. And that was because they had multiple voices throughout the team that all held a very, very important role. So I think, again, to bring it back to your question, if you're a fan, you just don't want this to be thrown under the rug, I would guess. And you would want multiple voices to kind of lead the charge forward in terms of how to fix this club.
It was a very informative piece. I really enjoyed it, Josh. But for me, thanks. I have a question for you personally, is what stood out to you? What surprised you about your findings when you're diving into this topic? Because I know you live it. I know you watch all these players and you get to talk to them. But what stood out to you?
It's a great question. I think just how far... I think just how bad things have gotten. But I think, again, what probably stuck out to me is the fact that it sounded like, you know, based on the number of people that we spoke to, that there was a feeling from some players that they can't speak their mind openly and honestly around certain other senior players in the club. And I don't think, you know, I don't think you have to, you know, go very far to figure out what I'm talking about here. But I think in any healthy workplace, sports organization, whatever, there has to be an avenue for people to speak their mind openly and honestly. And perhaps if you're a young player, you never, and like you guys would know, if you're a young player, you maybe don't feel so inclined to speak openly about your club anyway. But, you know, TFC has always fashioned themselves. They've been, you know, vocal about the fact that they think they're a family. Right. They've always felt like they're a family organization. And, you know, again, you guys would know if you're sitting at the dinner table, you know, with a big family, everybody speaks their mind openly and honestly. And I think that was what stood out to me was the fact that, you know, there were players at the club who were concerned about a lot of things in the club, but they felt they had to keep those concerns to themselves. When that happens, you create kind of you don't create a culture that is striving to improve. You create a culture where people kind of become more withdrawn. And I think that's very concerning. And I understand that's very holistic. And I'm sure people maybe want me to say the vape pen or whatever. But that's what's like personally.
Jordan does that at work all the time, Josh.
No, I don't.
I'm kidding.
I am not going to judge, you know, people on what they do. But no, that was concerning for me because, you know, when you're around good, thriving organizations, you know that there's an open sharing of, you know, values and thoughts. And yeah, I guess my takeaway is I'm not sure how much that happens at TFC right now.
Well, let's talk. You mentioned father-son relationship, player-coach relationship. The only thing I can think about is how difficult it was growing up when there was a player or a teammate of mine and his dad was a coach, and that treatment and kind of, well, he had to play because his dad was the coach and all these things. But on a professional level, how hard it must be for the Bradleys to have that father-son relationship. But do you think, obviously we all know it must be a strain in some way, but how much of a strain, I guess, is my question to you in your findings and what you've been looking at with this team?
You know what? It's weird how this works. It's made me think about it. My four-year-old son is starting T-ball this season. And my direct inclination was to be like, I want to coach because I kind of just want to do that. I find that stuff fascinating. I've coached before, but I stopped and said, I don't know if I, and I'm not saying it's because of this story, but it's made me think a little bit about, you know, that kind of dynamic. Here's where I'm at with that. And this, I want to be very fair to Michael Bradley here, who I feel comfortable saying is the most important player in TFC history, bar none. I think if you're Michael Bradley, you understand that you're coming towards the end of your career. And I don't think anybody has ever doubted that Michael Bradley would go into coaching because A, he has the experience, B, he has the brain for it. So if you're Michael Bradley, why wouldn't you want to spend time, a little more time in and around the coaches? And I saw it and I was told, like, he spent a lot of time, you know, in meetings with Greg Vanney that maybe other people, other players wouldn't have those type of meetings, right? Because I think if you're Michael Bradley, you want to understand the coaching world. You're not getting any younger. You're preparing for the next stage of your life. Michael Bradley is probably going to make a very good coach because, again, he has the experience, he has the brain for it. So for him to be in coaches' meetings or being around the coaches, stopping by the coaches' room, you know, on his way to the locker room, I think to some players that it might give them pause because they go, what's he doing in there? What's he saying? But in Michael Bradley's defense, this is something A, he's probably done a lot. B, this is something he finds informative for the next stage of his career. So I think we need to be fair to Michael Bradley there, but I also think we need to understand, or perhaps people around him need to understand that while he might have always done this, the perception has changed. Right. It's one thing to be going into the coach's room, if it's, you know, a coach from a different country or whatever. But it's another thing to be going into the coach's room when you know there is a very, very close relationship there. And my sense is it was the lack of that understanding that I think irked or has irked some players.
I think you've hit the nail right on the head because, to your point, Michael has been doing this with the different coaching staff. Yep. The difference is now his father is the coach and he kept things the same. In Michael's mind, not that I want to speak on his behalf, but he was probably thinking, this is what I do, so I'm not going to change anything. Ergo, I'm not going to treat my father any differently. But what you don't realize is that with that type of dynamic, you actually do have to change things. Because to your point, the perception also changes. So it was kind of that lack of adjustment, I think, that's hurt a little bit. A couple more questions that I do have for you, because I do want to go now to the leadership part of things. And, last week, there was another article that was written by Rachel Dory of the Hockey News, where she was talking about MLSE and the board of directors and just how there seems to be some issues at that level, how that's affected the Toronto Raptors, how that's affected the Toronto Maple Leafs. And then there was a little bit of a mention there as well when it comes to Toronto FC. If you're a player, I mean, do you feel like they have the faith that things can turn around? Because I don't know if I'm just being a little bit of an optimist here in thinking, maybe it's not so much an optimist. Maybe I'm being naive. Let's put it that way. Maybe the word is naive. Maybe I'm being naive in thinking if you get rid of the head coach, Bob Bradley, it'll fix everything. I don't think that's the case, right? Not that I'm saying that the players don't want change, but do you get the sense that more, even above Bob, leadership, that the players truly do feel like they can turn a corner here?
Well, and I mean, like, Jordo, you can speak to this. Like, as a player, I don't know how often, and I could be wrong, but I don't know how often players are really thinking about, the multiple layers on top of them in the food chain. Your direct contact is with your head coach, and that's usually what dominates your line of thinking. Now, if you're a player that's been around a club for a very long time, and you have an understanding of the inner workings of the club, then yeah, you might feel a little bit differently. But look, here's what I will say. The way it was expressed to me, and this didn't make it in the story, but the way it was expressed to me is that, you know, MLSE needs two things from their teams. They need them to win and they need them to come in under budget. Right. And this doesn't sound that strange, but these things are very hard to do. And I think that's why there's probably some real concerns throughout Toronto FC right now, because the wins aren't coming. The wins used to be coming. And the budget stuff is big, because it's not as if they're just like not winning. They're not winning, and they've spent more total player salary than any team in the league. Right. That's what we haven't even talked about here. That is such a huge part of this team and the way they're built. So I think if you're a player, you might have some concerns. I would imagine, I'm guessing here, because you're saying we've invested so much money in a few players. is that impacting the way other people think? Have we created too top down of a team? And is enough attention, I guess, being paid to other players in the club? So that's where I think the questions might come up. But again, like Giordo, you would know, like, do you really think about your sporting director? Do you think about ownership, or do you think about your head coach day to day?
I think it's the head coach who you're really talking to. But I think also as an older player, you start thinking about things beyond, right? And that's something to mention as well. But
yeah, now you nailed it, Josh. It was a great article. And now Giordo and I are going to get into this a little bit, because what does Bob Bradley do on Wednesday? Because they pulled off a win. They got a win without Bernadeschi. So we're going to have that conversation. But it was great checking in with you. Great stuff. Great article. And we'll talk to you another time.
Thanks to you both. Good luck. I want to see how this conversation plays out.
Because yeah, it's going to be juicy. That's Josh Cloak of The Athletic. If you haven't read the article, be sure to read the article. He, alongside Tenorio and Bogert, on Toronto FC and their situation. So let me ask you this. It's a crazy week. He does. So I talk to a lot of people who have held coaching or management jobs in sports and in professional sports, and they've all said, and Bob Bradley had to do what he did.
Agreed.
Because it wasn't just that Bernadeschi spoke out against the coach. It was the fact that he doubled down and then went to the media again. So he's like, you know, they all agreed that the coach had to assert his dominance and bench him. But they also all agreed that he has one shot to do it. One shot to get it right. And Giordo, he did. So they win 2-1. They have another game on Wednesday against Chicago.
Yeah.
If you're Bob Bradley, what are you doing? Are you saying, Bernadeschi, you're out completely again? Are you putting him on the bench? Are you turning around saying, DeAndre Kerr, Cozy Thompson, they scored. I got to get them in.
So many questions to answer. But the first one I would say is I'm not changing my starting lineup. It worked. They came with venom, energy, cool. Reward that if everyone's healthy, sharp, play that same lineup or something similar to it, right? We might tweak one or two things. But for me, a coach and a player's relationship is similar to a parent and a child's relationship. Now, I'm not talking about a parent and a four-year-old. Let's say a parent and whatever, a teenager. You need to still have dominance, whatever, or respect, but there has to be open communication. So if I'm Bob Bradley and I'm a coach, you're sitting down with Bernadeschi, you guys are getting rid of the bad blood, you're saying, look, I was wrong, apologies need to be had.
That takes some big people to put egos aside too, right?
You got to, right? Yeah. For the health of the team and to move forward, you have to do. And I also say, I look at the manager. I don't know Bob personally. I wish I did. I would love to pick his brain. But you got to go to Bernadeschi and you got to have a conversation. And you got to go with cool, calm heads. You can't go there saying, oh, this guy slated me or he did this in media. Think about the bigger picture, which is a team and winning. And you know that you're going to need Berna. You would rather have him than be benching him or ostracizing him. I would say have that conversation. Deal with the fact. If you can move forward together, have him on the bench. You can use him. Reinsert him into the lineup. Slowly bring him back in. That also starts from a training and how he's doing and how his attitude is. But that would be my plan of attack.
Conversation definitely needs to happen. You're right off the pitch. But I do think you put Fetty on the bench. I think DeAndre Kerr looked great.
Yeah.
Cozy Thompson comes in as a substitute and scores. And the fact that you won, like, to me, that's always an easy decision for
sure.
A manager. You won, so you stay status quo. As far as moving forward, you're right. I hope that, you know, Federico, because there's a part of me that he has to know he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
He's the harder chip to move. So you would hope that he wouldn't play that card, like, I'm going to be stubborn or whatever. But you also hope that Bob realizes the team spoke out because they were clearly upset.
Yeah.
Now, I say the team because Josh is right. Matt Hedges did speak after the game and talked about the vibe. So at some point as a manager, you have to understand that when your players take something out of the room, because we know how sacred it is to keep it in the room. That is sacred. So the fact that it came out of the room means the players probably feel like they're a little bit at their wit's end too. So both of you have to listen, because Bob obviously is not as safe.
Yeah.
As Fetty.
Great point. When you feel like you haven't been heard or change isn't being made and you want to win, this is what you're saying to athletes. You want them to perform, score goals, win. It's not working. You do something a bit different. Is that always right? No. Do I think Berna should have been in the media? No. But he did something saying, look, I want to win. This is what the underlying factor is.
Yeah.
So do I respect it? That's a whole nother story, but I understand it from a player's perspective.
Yeah, yeah. So the 30 minutes today, a lot of TFC talk, because that was the biggest story.
That's a huge story.
That was a huge story over the weekend. But it was still a great chat.
It was.
A little bit of this, a little bit of stirring the pot, a little bit of drama. Wills loves that more than Trills.